We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network wherever you go. In addition to listening live, you can check out information about your favorite talk show hosts, discover new talk show personalities, add shows to your list of favorites, and listen to all our show archives on demand. All from your iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market, and get ready to tune in. The Voice America mobile app, powered by Aircast.
The following program is being brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Welcome to Frame of Mind with your host, Terry Sue. If we learn to live and think healthier, we begin to explore and focus on our strengths. Once we determine what our strengths are, we can use those gifts and talents to help others to heal. Helping others fosters congeniality. Congeniality facilitates peace and love. Now, here's your host, Terry Sue.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Frame of Mind. I'm your host, Terry Sue, and today I'm discussing meditation with children with Andy Kelly, better known as the Boston Buddha. Andy Kelly prides himself on being a regular guy who is able to reach an audience that might not otherwise be inclined to meditate. On that premise, he founded the Boston Buddha with the mission to help average, everyday people feel better about themselves by meditating, or as he likes to say, getting out of their own way, so they can be more effective in their careers and happier in their lives. Andy is a certified meditation instructor for the Chopra Center. He's also a graduate of Jon Kabat-Zinn's, the Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction Program at the Center for Mindfulness at the University of Massachusetts Medical School. He teaches young and old, from professors to carpenters, moms and dads. In fact, the programs have morphed to include an elementary course for kids ages K through 5, and another for teenagers and workshops for corporations as well. So welcome, Andy.
Hey, thanks, Terry Sue, for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. So let's begin by having you tell our listening audience about the Boston Buddha and how you got that name.
Well, the Boston Buddha, as you kind of said there in the intro, is really, it's just a health and wellness company that kind of explores and tries to help articulate meditation so that, you know, we can go out and teach and explain it to average, everyday people like myself. And when I say average, I kind of just mean like non-meditating, like mm-hmm. myself. and the name really comes from, at the time I wanted to use the blue collar Buddha, but that was taken. So I kind of
really,
I thought that Boston, you know, it's kind of a hardworking city. It's mm-hmm. in Massachusetts. I'm a huge fan of all the Boston sports teams, so Boston Celtics, Boston Red Sox, Boston Buddha, and it kind of, my wife kind of came up with the Boston Buddha, and it kind of stuck.
Yeah, it's kind of cute. How did you discover meditation?
I discovered meditation, it seems a lot longer, but about 7 years ago, I was working, you know, like a lot of my friends and colleagues working, you know, 10, 12-hour days, 6, 7 days a week, and I was finding myself really stressed. So my own personal health was a particular concern for me because I was feeling, you know, tired and, mm-hmm. and just like overwhelmed all the time. So I'd come home from a hard day at work and I'd be like unmotivated, unavailable for like my wife and my beautiful son who was just born. So, you know, you do a lot of soul searching yourself. You search through the books, you'd kind of look at some things, and every single book, you know, had something good in it, whether it be exercise or some technique to kind of get me out of feeling so stressed all the time or lethargic. And all of them kind of had a chapter on meditation. I kind of always put it to the side until my wife had noticed, you know, hey, this is it. He's overly stressed. We got to do something. She gave me a book by Deepak Chopra called The Perfect Health. Mm-hmm. And at the time, being that average blue-collar guy, I was like, I'm not reading this book. I have no interest in reading it. I wanted nothing to do with it. But I did. I read it, and I surprisingly connected with a lot of the material in the book. I say especially this little piece on meditation. So if you're going to get a guy like me to meditate, you know, you essentially need to do two things. You have to, the first being, if I'm going to sit for a long period of time, you have to prove to me it worked. And this is something that Deepak Chopra and Dr. David Simon were easy to do once I started reading their books. They were able to take these, you know, ancient teachings and kind of distill it down for someone, you know, for lack of better, no offense to them, they were just able to explain it to a guy like me who isn't that spiritually advanced, you know. Mm-hmm. I wasn't ready for all, like, the deep stuff.
Excuse me.
They were able to explain it in a very, you know, straight, direct approach, which I kind of liked. And so I went to the Chopra Center, and I took a meditation course and started meditating. That's when I do say it first, you know, the benefits for me didn't come as quickly as they did for somebody, you know, some of the other folks that I took a class with. But at the same time, you know, I didn't know what to expect. And I think because I wanted it to work so quickly, you know, I fell in that mindset of it better work fast. You know,
were you one of those ones that was sneaking a peek at your watch?
Oh yeah. Oh, my gosh. All the time. I was like, why isn't this working? Am I almost done? I still do that sometimes, you know. It's something that took a while for me to understand. In fact, the only reason I stuck with it was my wife started to notice that I was sleeping through the night, something that I'd never been able to do.
So yeah, that's great.
Once I noticed that benefit, that pure benefit of just being able to sleep, you know, 6-7 hours a night, I was able to say, you know, I can handle any stress thrown at me during the day if I can get that quality sleep. And then,
bit of that getting out of your own way, too.
Exactly. And once I was able to do that, then doors would start to open, personally and professionally and in general, just my own, I call it my mental flexibility, started to show with people that I work with, you know, people that would come into my office and I usually might not get along with them. I was able to kind of take a step back and be more reflective instead of normally being so reactive to the situation or kind of guessing before they were in my office of what they wanted. So that's essentially how I discovered it.
Mm-hmm. And you've already talked about what you saw immediately were the benefits of sleeping through the night. I know that was one of the pluses for me when I started meditating. But actually, before I started with the Chopra Center, I had already been trying different ways of meditating because I wanted to incorporate more of it into my morning routine after prayer and whatnot. And I found that the type of meditation that I was doing helped me to focus with the when I say the type, I mean mantra-based for a while to get me out of my own way and to really just kind of quiet my mind and still it from all of the busyness of the day. And that was very different from the meditation that I was doing before. So
for
I was concentrating more on getting out of my own way than actually getting out of my own way. So the mantra kind of helped to distract me from that process.
Sometimes I call it the Band-Aid, right? It becomes like you put the Band-Aid on and the mantra is kind of like the Band-Aid. And then once you stop using the mantra, it's almost like you're taking the Band-Aid off and you can deal with the stuff that's really important.
That's right, because actually I don't use the mantra anymore. It's just easier for me to just center and find that quiet and stillness of the morning before everybody is up and before the sun comes up to really start my day, and I find it really very, very refreshing, and it's easier for me to get through the day.
That's my favorite part of the day.
So what inspired you to start teaching then?
So I think what I was realizing is, like, after, like, the third month, I was, like, one of those guys that didn't, I would tell my wife, you know, I'm not telling anyone, I'm meditating. I was very private about it. So it is kind of weird to see me, you know, here, you know, 7 years later teaching it. But I had such a dramatic shift in my life in terms of, I saw so many little things start to pile up because I was doing it every single day. I was doing it twice a day, mm-hmm. but I wasn't changing anything else. I was essentially sitting for 30 minutes in the morning and 20, 30 minutes in the afternoon. And I was seeing so much, you know, change in my life. And essentially I was realizing that I wasn't striving so much anymore. I was just genuinely happy, authentically confident. And I said, there are so many guys that I know that like me, so many people like me, parents that work a lot, they're always on the go. They could use this, but like use it as like coming from someone that has walked in their shoes, so to speak, mm-hmm. and doesn't take it so seriously. So I knew I had a lighthearted approach to it, but at the same time, I was walking proof of how much I had changed in, you know, I guess it was 2 years after I started meditating. I decided that's when I wanted to see if I could help people, you know, unplug a little bit, mm-hmm. just unplug yes. a couple times a day and hopefully be more effective in their careers and happier in their lives.
Well, so then with that in mind, how did you start teaching children?
So I got into teaching children. That was kind of it was an accident, believe it or not. It was, I was of the firm belief that once I started teaching parents and in corporations, I started to notice a lot of people would come up to me and say, you know, I really, do you do any classes for kids? And could you help me put together a program for kids? And I had the knowledge, but I always thought that if the parents aren't meditating, then no matter what, the kids are always going to feel their parents' stress. So I figured the key was, let's get the parents meditating, and then the kids will eventually just kind of glide over to it because they see a calm parent, they want to emulate it, and they start practicing. But it actually worked in reverse. Once I started teaching children, my wife said, you know what, you're Hayden, my son, I have he's almost nine, a nine-year-old son that has been meditating since he was five. Mm-hmm. And he's obviously had his own ups and downs, but I've seen a consistent change in the way he approaches everything from homework to sports, enough where my wife is like, you should probably start incorporating this for the neighborhood kids. So we did the neighborhood kids. And then it morphed into teaching at a before club program, like a before school program that they had at my son's elementary school. And now it's kind of blossomed into helping the kids. And every day that we teach, we send the kids home with a takeaway sheet. It's like something to work on. Mm-hmm. Because I felt that, you know, my son does sports and does taekwondo. And, you know, you ask him how it is and he'll say it's great. And he'll mm-hmm. say, you know, that's it, though. So I felt if they had something to bring home that the parents could actually touch and see and read, then they could also help their kids, you know, be more focused, whether it's doing, you know, everything from chores to homework to, you know, just talking to each other and looking each other in the eyes at the dinner mm-hmm. table. And then that's when the parents started to call me and say, you know what, I think I need this.
Yeah, well, we're going to come back to that, and we're going to continue that discussion, but right now it's time for us to take a short break. So this is Terry Sue with my guest, Andy Kelly, the Boston Buddha, and you are listening to Frame of Mind on Voice America Seventh Wave Channel. Stay tuned.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
join Patricia Raskin, the host of Positive Living on VoiceAmerica.com, Monday at 11 Pacific. This program brings you practical and inspiring principles for living a more authentic, engaging, and passionate life. Patricia's guests will give you a formula for connecting, giving, forgiving, and miraculous living. So tune in and call to Positive Living, Mondays at 11 Pacific Time, right here on VoiceAmerica.com.
If you think you've seen online TV before, let us surprise you.
VoiceAmerica.tv is online now.
The leader in live internet talk radio has done it again. Multiple channels, a state-of-the-art viewing experience, live and on-demand programs streaming 24 hours a day. It's exactly what you want, when you want it.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
From health and wellness to business, sports, and everything in between, discover our new world. Visit VoiceAmerica.tv now and experience the future of online television.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
Go behind the scenes of what you see, hear, and read on the news. Learn the ins and outs of public relations on Stars of PR with Cindy R. every Thursday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time. Cindy Rakowitz is a Clio Award winner and founder of Rock and Roll Public Relations, who wants to share her PR experiences and knowledge with you. Learn how to handle a crisis, deal with celebrities, and become a terrific PR executive. Listen to the Stars of PR with Cindy R. every Thursday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time here on News Talk Radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Awakened Media for a transforming world. Seventh Wave Network.
You are tuned into Frame of Mind with your host, Terry Sue. If you have a question or comment for our host, or just want to find out more about our program and an Ayurvedic lifestyle, please email terry.suehill@yahoo.com. That's terri.suehill@yahoo.com. Now back to Frame of Mind.
We're back and continuing our discussion on meditation with children with my guest, Andy Kelly, the Boston Buddha. So, Andy, we were talking before about how you started teaching children about meditation and how you needed to start working. You worked with parents. You felt like you needed to start working with parents first before working with children, since, you know, parents, of course, would have the greater influence on encouraging their children to meditate. So what types of meditation did you teach the parents? And then was that any different from the type of meditation that you teach the kids?
A little bit different. I teach primordial sound meditation for the Chopra Center. So I teach that to a lot of parents. A lot of parents are interested in that. So that's the one I usually focus on, the mantra base. And as you say, as a beginner, it certainly is the easiest one to grasp in terms of seeing results. So a lot of the parents kind of like that aspect of it. So that's one area. So we'll just call that the mantra base. So parents, I teach a mantra base, but I also teach a prana or breath awareness class for the parents that is a little more adaptable for the students' class. One of the classes that I graduated from was, as you said earlier, the Jon Kabat-Zinn mindfulness-based stress reduction. And a lot of those teachings, you're able to adapt them to children pretty effectively, because a lot of it deals with, being your best self and parenting your best self. So what I did was I combined it a lot of the teachings that I learned from Jon Kabat-Zinn's course, and then, you know, everything from all, you know, the parenting books that I bombarded myself with once my son was born, from everything from The Mindful Child by Susan Kaiser Greenland to Parenting with Dignity by Mac Bledsoe, mm-hmm. to Everyday Blessings, The Inner Work of Mindful Parenting by Jon Kabat-Zinn and his wife, Myla. So I use those books to help me with the activities, because you got to kind of keep the kids engaged. The way I do that is kind of making sure that it's fun. Mm-hmm. So we teach mostly breath-based in one of the classes, we do teach a mantra if the kids are having difficulty with the breath. But for the most part, the kids like the breath. They like the inhale, the exhale, and the pause in between. And that's,
you know,
go ahead.
I was sharing with another guest how I use that during testing to help prepare the kids for testing in the spring. So we start, that's how we start our day with breathing exercises. And I had a parent that was helping with the testing, you know, with the sharpening of pencils and all that kind of stuff. And she was there when I was doing some of those exercises with the kids, and she just loved it. And she told me later on that her own daughter goes home now and she practices that in the morning sometimes. So that really made me feel good, and I got a lot of positive feedback from that. But I have been doing that just before testing in the spring, and the students will then ask me, are we going to do breath this morning, Miss Hill? And so it was just, it's refreshing to know that they embrace that.
Yes, and you know, I have a lot of moms that'll come to the before school meditation classes that I teach, that if they come, they will do the meditation with us, and they say that I get the same feedback from the moms. But what you said is key, and you know, I know it's down the road probably, but getting this to the teachers is my number one priority for next year, in terms of, you know, it's one thing to teach the kids this in the morning, but to incorporate it before a test is such a wonderful place to start, because you'll see the results of a kid that's stressed, and you can give him 5 minutes to just focus and feel his breath, and you'll see a dramatic change in the way they take that test.
Yes, I agree. So with you focus on breath, as you said, with the students. Do you do any other kind of meditations with them?
Sure, we do movement meditation. We'll do a walking meditation, but most of it is based around the structure really allows for an activity, 5 to 10 minutes of meditation depending on how old the students are. And then a little talking about the activity and why we used it to incorporate it in the meditation. So we don't have a lot of time, so we kind of keep the structure the same. So we work with a few different types of meditation, but it's really more to bring their awareness to their senses and
Andy,
how they.
Could you explain walking meditation?
Sure. So what we'll do is what we'll do, depending on the age, once again, is everyone, we kind of all sit in a circle. So we're all sitting, and I'll ask the class, okay, what muscle moves first when you're about to get up from your seat? If I were to ask you to get up from your seat, what, you know, muscles do you think you would use first? Mm-hmm. And you get a wide variety of answers. And
So
we practice that. I say, okay, get up. Now just feel that. And then remember, you know, that maybe it was your hand that moved first to get the position to push off, or maybe it was your back straightened, and then you leaned forward and put your weight. So we start there, and then we sit again. And then essentially, much like the inhale, the exhale, and the pause in between, we're doing the lifting, moving, and placing your foot. And you're at the same time, you're just focusing on your step. If that falls in line with your breath, that's fine. But for the most part, you're focusing on the step to the next step. And at the same time, you get a heightened sense of everything else that's going on around you.
This is a little bit out there, but wouldn't it be really great if every playground had a labyrinth?
Yeah, it would.
That would be the coolest thing.
Oh, yeah, it would. It really would.
And to see how students would use it, actually. To see whether or not they would really be quiet and walk that labyrinth at recess time, or if they had a timeout even. I think that would be really something to observe.
I agree, and it depends
teachers
on where,
as well.
Right, it depends on where it is. Like, there's a drastic difference between if you put a labyrinth in a recess area or if you put it like maybe near in a room near the library. You know, if we're thinking mm-hmm. way out
a
there,
quiet
right?
Place, yes.
Right, so they know. Okay, this is where we're focusing on something. Let's just see, you know, what type of energy we bring to that room. But yeah, no, I agree. I think it would be great.
Yeah, I know we have several big trees on our campus, and a lot of times if a child is upset, they go and walk around the tree, and they just touch it, and I think it's just knowing that that tree is there, and they are just kind of thinking out their problems, because I ask them sometimes if I have duty, you know, what are you doing? And they will tell me, you know, they're just kind of unwinding. They'll use other words, but you can tell what they mean. And so there's a big need for, where I'm going with this is there's a big need for children to be able to just stop. You know, a lot of times they're involved in a lot of activities, mm-hmm. and they don't really have a chance to listen. Just be still and listen to what's going on inside of them. They just know that they're feeling these emotions, and they have a little bit of an idea of where it's coming from, but they really don't know how to deal with them because they are on to the next activity without having a chance to just kind of settle. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Exactly. And even shifting their attention from one activity to the other. Once mm-hmm. they, you know, that's really difficult for, you know, a kindergarten, first, second grader. But once they've mastered that, then it's one to the next, to the next, to the next, to homework, to after school, to hockey, to basketball, to whatever, right? And they're just as overscheduled as the adults are.
That's right. That's right. So that brings me to the next question then. So how old are the children that you teach?
So the kids that I teach now are K through 5, with the main focus on 3 to 5. Those are the ones that I teach these structured classes that revolve around the senses and your body's reaction to them. I do also teach, I teach in one private school here in Boston that it's usually around finals week. I'll mm-hmm. come in before like a study hall and teach a quick seminar and then guide them into a meditation. And, of course, high school kids. So really K through 12, but the main focus is, I would say, grades 3, or I would say my sweet spot would be mm-hmm. 3 to 5. Because I really think if you get them at that age, I think it's the best age because they've mastered the tasks. They know what's expected of them by the time they get to third grade, and they're starting to develop into their own person. And if you can get them at that and get these foundations or a few techniques in place, they may not use it now, but I'm almost certain they'll come back to it in high school or in college when they need it.
Yeah, they do remember those quiet times and those times that are comforting, because meditation is comforting. And it's a way of self-comforting, and also it's a way to embrace the feeling of those who have done the comforting or taught them how to do that. So it's just so beneficial for children to learn to just to be quiet for a little while. They don't always have to be extremely busy. As a matter of fact, it's more beneficial for them to learn how to get to know themselves. It's a way for them to get to know themselves, too.
Sure. Before they forget.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because at that age, whatever age, whether it's elementary school and especially middle school, where there are just so many things are going on with them, they are very easily influenced. And if they don't get to know themselves, they can easily be influenced to go in the wrong direction. So there are, again, you know, just so many benefits to learning how to meditate and to learning how to embrace that stillness and quietness that is so essential in getting to know also what your strengths and what your weaknesses are as well.
Right, so. Right. And I think that age, the 3 to 5, you're also looking at kids that still kind of it's easier to get them to not really buy in, probably not the best word, but it's usually what I use, mm-hmm. to buy into it, because you're showing them, hey, are you having trouble paying attention? This can help you pay attention. Mm-hmm. Are Are you having trouble reacting after you're upset? Well, this will help you see the experience more clearly so you don't always react.
And yeah, so we're going to come back to that, Andy, but it's time for us to take another short break.
Sure.
So this is Terry Sue with my guest, the Boston Buddha, and you are listening to Frame of Mind on Voice America Seventh Wave Channel. Stay tuned.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
Explore the infinite possibilities of the unknown. Learn about the mysterious and mythical realms through time and space. Realize your inner truth. Tune in to Spirit Walker with Dr. Jeffrey Pierce and Dr. Cindy Pierce. Dr. Jeffrey Pierce is a true intuitive. He is legally blind, uses no cards, pendulums, or guides, and has been found to have 97% consistent accuracy based on testing by the United Kingdom Institute of Psychic Sciences Research Center. Listen for topics that others are afraid to address on Spirit Walker, Wednesday at 1 p.m. East, 10 a.m. West on Seventh Wave Network.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network wherever you go. In addition to listening live, you can check out information about your favorite talk show hosts, discover new talk show personalities, add shows to your list of favorites, and listen to all our show archives on demand. All from your iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market, and get ready to tune in. The Voice America mobile app, powered by Aircast.
Do you want to know what's really going on these days? Well, Capital Thinking takes you inside the worlds of policy, politics, law, and business. What happens in Washington, on Wall Street, and in our nation's legal system impacts your business every day. We're taking you on a behind-the-scenes tour of all of it. Each week, we bring you unfiltered conversation with a variety of influential policymakers, lawyers, and business leaders. I'm Kevin O'Neill, and I'm your host as Capital Thinking tours the halls of power. Join me for Capital Thinking on the Voice America Business Network each Thursday at noon Eastern and 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
Be extraordinary. Seventh Wave Network.
You are tuned into Frame of Mind with your host, Terry Sue. If you have a question or comment for our host, or just want to find out more about our program and an Ayurvedic lifestyle, please email terry.suehill@yahoo.com. That's terri.suehill@yahoo.com. Now back to Frame of Mind.
Once again, welcome back, everyone. We're continuing our discussion on meditation with children with my guest, Andy Kelly, the Boston Buddha. So, Andy, how long do you meditate with children? Does it vary according to age?
It does. At the Chopra Center, the way we were taught was that the age the child is probably the age of the attention span. So if they're 8 years old, you try to get them to meditate for 8 minutes. So if you have a structured class between, you know, your third and your fifth grade, then you grab the middle number. So, you know, you're doing 8 minutes, you know, it's easy to do it that way. And what I find is that the kids that do it for the 8 minutes are usually restless the first four. You know, the first four, you hear it, because you do it with them because you want them to know that you're doing it too. So I close my eyes and I'll sit with them and I'll open every once in a while, and they're usually, you know, all sitting there, or, you know, rocking back and forth, or you hear scuffling or people playing with their glasses and things like that. But after about 4 minutes, you can really feel the room drop.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is kind of amazing. It doesn't happen every time, but the times that it does, man, it is special, because it's almost like you can see where they're having those conversations, where they're going inhale, pause, exhale, inhale, pause, exhale, and then everything kind of just melts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a great feeling. And that's when you get the best, you know, the best responses from the kids on how they actually felt, you know.
Well, with me teaching second graders, I know that when I have them closing their eyes, you know, the first couple of times that we're doing that, and I'll say, now, no peeking. And somebody will say, after we're done, they'll say, Miss Hill. And they'll tell me some. I'll just say, Joey peeked. And then they start saying, well, how do you know that I peaked if you didn't peek? You know, there's a lot of that stuff going on. It's kind of funny. So we have a quick chuckle and we say, okay, well, it's time to be serious.
That's the best part of it, right? That's the fun aspect of it. I said that today. I said, how many people peeked? And I was the first one to raise my hand.
Yeah. And they really get a kick out of that. But then after a while, especially with breath, it becomes wanting to achieve a personal best when they're following directions that way. And if someone is talking about how good it feels, then the others will want to achieve that same, you know, that same feeling. So then they stop fooling around so much, and then they really take it seriously, and it's a joy. That's a joy to see students embrace that.
Yeah, it's almost like they're little detectives. Once you get them hooked, they want to explore that. So what I was saying earlier, you know, that inner landscape that we all have, and it just becomes just as much fun as, you know, as when they were a little bit younger, when they were exploring rocks, when they were obsessed with a rock, and wow, look at this rock, and you know, most of us adults will just walk by all that stuff now.
So that also addresses awareness.
Yeah,
wouldn't you say?
Yes, and you know, the key is really is to keep it fun and keep it like they're exploring. And what I say is, you know, mindfulness really is being aware of what's going on. It's like a mirror of what's going on right now inside of your body and outside, and knowing how you feel about that. And it's not just thinking of your breath. You know, I had a student come up to me today and said they have the MCAS, which is our standardized testing here in Massachusetts. And she was nervous about it last week. And she came up to me today and she said, I use the breath like you taught me, and it helped me focus on the question and not the whether or not I was going to get it wrong didn't matter anymore. And that's when I knew that that these kids are becoming more aware of the present moment, which is really what my goal is. And that's, you know, if that happens once a semester, I'm psyched.
Yes. So speaking of responses that you've gotten, how about when you're actually in the class or with the students or in the room with the students or children, is there any self-reflection that is shared there in the classroom afterwards?
You know, what I say is when we start doing this, these kids are young, so a lot of the older kids really take a lot longer to open up anyway. But you bring it again back to awareness, right? That's what my job is, to help bring awareness to that feeling or whatever their sensation. But my job is not to get into their personal problems. You know what I mean?
Right. Do you find that sometimes, though, that they will want to share a little bit more as time goes on?
Towards the end, yes, absolutely. But we don't make it personal. If it's personal, it's you know, my sister said something that wasn't nice to me, and you know, one of the techniques that we teach is being okay with somebody not saying something nice to you, and just saying, you know, it's based on that Buddhist tradition. It's a Buddhist saying, actually, and we kind of change it around a little bit. But it is, and I read it from The Mindful Child, but it's called, is it true, is it nice, is it necessary? So if you can answer those three questions, then you can, you know, you can react the way more appropriately. So is it true?
Is it true? Is it nice? Is it necessary?
The parents love it too, because the parents are the ones that when they read that sheet, they try to do it. And the parents in me, believe me, my son will be the first one to tell me, is it true? Is it nice? Is it necessary, Dad?
So he's giving it right back to you.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
I know this kind of seems like a rhetorical question, but how do you know if they are meditating when you're with them?
Yeah, I guess I don't. I really don't. And, you know, and that's okay, because I don't know if when my wife is meditating, if she's meditating. You know, it's more, are the kids closing their eyes? And usually we're doing some type of activity, too. So if, for example, we may ring a Tibetan gong or a Tibetan bowl or some type of chime, mm-hmm. and the goal of the meditation is to raise your hand when you don't hear it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you, and they love games like that, mm-hmm. any type of mm-hmm. listening game, they love, and that elongates their attention span. So I feel like little by little, if we can help build, we're helping them build the capacity to pay attention, and that is more important, I think, than are they actually meditating. I'm not downplaying the meditation part of it, but it's more, are they more aware when they're not meditating? One of my favorite games to play with the kids that I hear the most is a game that we call Catch Yourself. If you can catch yourself, the more times you catch yourself not paying attention, that is a once you catch yourself and redirect your attention back to your teacher or whoever is speaking to you, that's mindful awareness.
Yes.
So I don't know if they're meditating, but I know that their eyes are closed and they're following directions to learn how to expand their awareness.
Mm-hmm. I know that when I am attempting to meditate with the students, I peek I look at their facial expressions, and some of them really seem to be into it, and others, it's just like adults, others is like hurry up and just get it over and done with. and then I, later on in the week, I'll watch, and some of them, the ones that were looking like, oh, when is this going to be done? After a while, they look like they're starting to really get into it and feel that vibe, I guess, for lack of a better word right now, of being relaxed. And it's like, oh, I get it now. They get it. And then right. The other ones who got it all along are kind of going for a personal best. They have that serious yet relaxed look on their face. I just love to watch them, and then I know that I have to also close my eyes and participate. Otherwise, they'll say, Miss Hill was peeking. She was looking the whole time. She wasn't doing it at all, you know. So I just love the looks on their faces when they're really giving it a try, an honest try. Well, it's time for us to take another short break, though, Andy. So this is Terry Sue with my guest, the Boston Buddha, and you're listening to Frame of Mind on Voice America Seventh Wave Channel. Stay tuned.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
Leadership is a destination, but how do you get there? More importantly, how do you maximize your power and influence and develop more leaders in your organization? Learn from proven leaders and proven practices. Join Drs. Kathy Greenberg and Relly Nadler for Leadership Development News. This program will help you develop the next leaders in your organization, balance your work life, manage your boss, and manage yourself. We'll feature cutting-edge interviews with industry experts and authors. Leadership Development News, every Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the Voice America Business Channel.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our wall. Just go to facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
Income Property Investment Talk with Peter Mosca and Dean Esop provides homeowners and investors eager to invest well in real estate the knowledge, resources, and tools necessary to generate significant wealth. Our focus will be the paradigm. Live where you want. Invest where it makes the most sense. Listen live to the brightest minds in real estate investment every Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. That's Income Property Investment Talk with Peter Mosca and Dean Esa, where America learns to invest.
The new home for visionary positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You are tuned into Frame of Mind with your host, Terry Sue. If you have a question or comment for our host, or just want to find out more about our program and an Ayurvedic lifestyle, please email terry.suehill@yahoo.com. That's terri.suehill@yahoo.com. Now back to Frame of Mind.
Once again, welcome back, everyone. We're continuing our discussion on meditation with children with my guest, Andy Kelly, the Boston Buddha. So, Andy, how on the average, how long is each class? I know you were saying that 8 minutes to meditate, but when your sessions, I suppose, is what I'm asking you. How long are the sessions?
And that's depending on the size, but it's usually we usually have about 20 students in the class, and that class is between 40 and 45 minutes. Yeah, and that really, and that's, it seems like that's a lot of time for a meditation class, but you'd be surprised how many things we don't get done.
So what goes on? Now I'm intrigued. What goes on in that 45-minute time?
So every class starts off with everyone saying good morning to each other, and this kind of builds on the teamwork aspect of the relationship with the group. So everyone, it's like bringing that that individual into the universal. You know, we want everyone to say good morning, look each other in the eyes, and then whatever sense we're working on that week is the kind of the game we play. This is one of those ones that's adapted from the Mindful Child, where we say, you know, good morning, Terry Sue, I see your sneakers, or I like your sneakers, or I hear noise, or, you know, the game could be, good morning, Terry Sue, I'm thinking about my birthday party last weekend, and then you have to say whether that's the past, the present, or the future. So by the time we make it around the room playing one of those games, that's a good 15 minutes right there. And then we'll talk about it, and the questions that we ask after is, you know, essentially, how did you feel when you had to wait 20 people? You know, I'll ask someone that's the 20th person, how did it feel to have to wait that long? Mm. And then I'll move around the room. How did it feel the second person when you were done? Or how did it feel when somebody gave you a compliment? And we're just asking them, you know, just to ask yourself, how does it feel when somebody says something nice to you? And then hopefully that message is weaved in at the end of the class by saying, okay, so your job for next class is say something nice to somebody today, and then ask yourself internally, how did it feel after you said it?
So that also instills patience too.
Yeah, it takes a while. I mean, it's funny, in the first, you know, it's usually a 10-week course. The first couple of weeks, it takes a while to get around the room. But that's good, because the last couple of weeks you get around the room, but like we had said earlier, they want to talk more. They want to tell you how they're feeling, where in the beginning they more just want to get through it, you know. So yeah, that takes a good chunk. And then there's the meditation that we focus on. And then we usually weave that into the activity. And the activity, we usually isolate a sense. And we make it fun. You know, in the mindfulness class that I took, you know, one day I remember we ate a raisin. You know, that was mindful eating. We focused on mindful eating. And you know, not every kid, you got to get permission first of all, but not every kid wants to eat a raisin at 7:30 in the morning. So how cool is it to say they can eat an M&M though at 7:30 in the morning? Just to be able to tell their friends that. Oh,
of
I had
course.
An M&M. So we do that, and you know, we say, now look at the M&M now, you know, what does it smell like? What does it feel like? Now put it in your mouth. Don't don't crunch on it yet. And then we notice, you know, how much we're not in the moment when we're even eating. So we do things like that, and there's so many games that we've played. One of the kids said, "Do you ever run out of games?" And I said, "I don't think I have," because there's just too many. If you take a sense and you say, "Okay, today we're going to, you know, do some yoga poses, but I'm going to leave the room. You guys pick a leader, and you guys all follow that leader, and then I have to guess which kid is the leader of the group. And if they're all working as a team, I'm not going to be able to do that." And they love when they get me, and that part I'm serious about it because I want to see if they can do it. And you know, depending on the age, of course, but and they can trick me.
Wow.
So that takes up it varies week to week, but that takes up the 40 minutes right there.
So, what's the best? Now I know that you said you work with the kids in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And do you feel like that's the best time for them to meditate? Do you encourage anything like evening meditation at home, like a homework assignment, not really calling it homework?
I ask them to do it every day before they do their homework. I think the best time to do it, I don't think there's a bad time. Oh, yes, I do. Actually, the one time I would say don't suggest that you tell your children to meditate is right after school. Like right when they get home. Because they're so
too much stuff.
Yeah, they've been wound up. They've been sitting at a desk all day. The last thing they want to do is spend 10 more minutes sitting by yourself.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Sure.
I'll say do it before your homework. I think the best thing that we did for me personally was my wife, my son, and I all go to work or school usually around the same time. So what we'll do is we'll all sit for 10 minutes now, every morning from like 8 to 8:10, and nothing's on in the house, and we all just sit on the couch together, and I think it's the best way to start your day, and we do it 5 days a week, and then I don't make my son do it on the weekends, but if he wants to, he can join me.
Yeah. Have you gotten any feedback from from teachers? Noticing the difference in their students?
You know, the closest I've come is from a tutor. I've had tutors. I don't really interact with the teachers as much as the parents because it's before school program.
Mm-hmm.
I usually hear, things from the parents, but they usually email notes that usually start off something like, "I'm not sure if this is because of the mindfulness class, but today, so-and-so, said he wanted to hit his brother, but didn't because he caught himself." And okay, great. That's what we teach him. We teach him, yes, you feel anger for somebody hitting you. You can feel that. That's normal. Everyone has those thoughts, but don't react to it.
Yes.
And so I'll hear things like that anytime I run into a parent. But the notes that I get are great. And I'll hear from kids, which is even better. I had a girl tell me that she's so cute. She told me she went to the penalty box, I guess in hockey. She must play ice hockey, and she was going to cry, and she felt like she was going to cry, but she remembered if she just followed her breath, that it would make her feel better, and it did.
Oh, that's great.
So hearing that type of thing, or you know, it helped me before MCAS and stuff like that. I love to hear it, but on the other side, on the other end, I also hear, "When's the class over? are we done yet?" And you know, this meditation's boring. So you know, it does run the gamut.
And it is, as you said, it is. It can be more rewarding to hear directly from the children than it would maybe from a parent or a teacher, because the children are the ones that are the most affected, and they are the ones that are going to take that skill and do something with it if they have truly embraced it. So, I absolutely agree with that. Do you have any tips for children on maintaining their meditation practices when faced with adversity? Because that sounds like it's a real coping skill for some of them. And I know it is.
Yeah, I mean, the is it true, is it nice, is it necessary one is a really
yes,
big...
Yes, yeah, I love that. I wrote that down just now, as a matter of fact. I think I use that one myself.
I use it too, and it really does help you. It helps you, it stops you from gossiping. It stops you from just, you know, saying things that aren't necessary. You know, mm-hmm. It's just not... We say so many things just to fill space.
Yes.
You know, am I a pro at it? No. So, but I say that and catch yourself are probably the two things. You know, especially, you know, if I'm in there volunteering, and I'll see some kids that I know take the class and we're out on the playground, I'll say, they'll come up to me, so-and-so did this. I was like, okay, did you catch yourself? And they're like, oh, no, I forgot.
Yeah.
So, you know, you kind of reinforce it that way. But the tips that I use for parents sometimes is the same thing. I'll say, make sure you're asking, is it true, is it nice, is it necessary, because your children are going to be what they see, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree. I wanted to give you, I just love this. I could go on and on as far as talking about children is concerned, but I did want to give you a little bit of an opportunity to tell us about the work you're doing with corporations in Boston. I have to emphasize being brief because we don't have that much time left now.
Sure. I teach essentially workshops. A lot more organizations now are starting to understand that, you know, they can't get more out of the people. Essentially, they gave us all the gear that we need to perform our jobs around the clock at home with all the technology we have. So now they're turning to try to invest instead of, you know, trying to get more out of them. They're investing in these people, you know, and helping them by letting, you know, someone like me come in there and teach them how to meditate. So and they really start to understand that meditation can, you know, dramatically increase everything from getting things done in meetings to not wasting so much time and energy on things that don't matter in the office.
Right. Stop sweating the small stuff, right?
Yes, I teach them a few techniques. We meditate. And that aspect of it's really taken off. I'm getting some really good feedback, so I'm really happy with that.
Well, I must say, Andy, I have totally enjoyed our conversation. This has been wonderful. Great. Hope we get a chance to do it again.
Oh, I'd love to. Absolutely. This has been the best.
And once again, thank you, Andy, for sharing your journey, facilitating the healing process with your worthwhile quest to help children find balance and to center themselves by quieting their minds and finding peace and solitude through meditation. So if our listeners would like to find out more, Andy, how can you be reached?
Actually, they can go to my site. It's thebostonbuddha.com. Also have a Facebook, Twitter accounts, the same, The Boston Buddha is usually the handle on both.
Okay, and I want to thank you, my listening audience, for tuning in to Frame of Mind today. I hope that you've enjoyed our time together, and I'd like to ask you to think about someone you know who could be helped or served by this knowledge and share it with them. In the meantime, live in peace and love, everyone, and enjoy your day. Bye.
We hope that you've enjoyed our program this week. Please join your host, Terry Sue, again next weekend. We'll be here Saturdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, on 7th Wave Network. Until then, focus on your strengths. Live and think healthier this week. Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the 7th Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.